always, keep supporting local arts, local performers, and just truly the incredible creative community we have here in Kingston. So I will catch you next time on CFRC 101.9 FM.
And good afternoon. It's 4 o'clock. Thanks for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located here in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. This is Finding a Voice, a spoken word program airing here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. And we do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And coming up on the show today, both hours are going to feature the June 2nd, and the Journey Continues open mic at the Elm Cafe in two rounds. And you'll hear the first round in the first hour, second round in the second hour. You're going to hear in the first hour readings by Deborah Brown, Dozy Ubozi, Chantel Lavoie, Earl Collier, Michael Flaho, Layli Jamali, Joseph Elliott, Somali Samaya, Bruce Cudmore, John Mahan, Matt Brack, Taylor Davies, Irfan, Meg Freer, Gwen Whitford, Beth Marie Mihauska, Alan Watt, Emily Wright, Sarah Emtage, Lindsay Key, Eric Folsom, Melanie Dinkus, Harlan Crow, and maybe me, if I can get that in. It's going to be very tight. I might be in the second hour. Anyway, my first mention here is that occasionally some poetry, spoken word, or music played on this show may contain strong language, but all is played in its entirety with content unedited to honor the creative integrity of both the author and the piece. And I know I'm kind of hurrying this, but let's go ahead and just jump into it and see if I can get most of the first round in the first hour. Here we go. Well, we want to do the usual thing. Well, welcome everybody. What a nice crowd. So this is, give yourselves a hand for coming out on a beautiful evening. And there are a few people that are new, so if you're reading for the first time, just let me know. These end up on my radio show at CFRC. If you do not want it to air there, let me know that. We just write "no" by your name on this sheet. The other thing is, this isn't a microphone, it is a recorder. So just kind of talk into it, but about this far back. But you also have to project a little bit because it's not a microphone. So anyway, my heartfelt thanks for coming out as we begin our 18th year here at this reading. So, and if you haven't seen it, is it okay if I plug you? About the... Sorry?
I think you have the wrong person.
Okay, oh, see back there? I can't see that far in the dark.
Yeah.
Is it okay if I plug your thing?
Yeah, go on.
She was here for the last month, and she did a write-up about the group. So it's in the Kingstonist, so you can find it there.
Well, thank you.
There you go. I thought I'd let you know. Emily Wright. And she's also going to be reading tonight, and I'm sorry you have about the same length hair as her, and my eyes inside aren't that good. So my apologies so for putting you on the spot. Anyway, thank all of you for coming out. We are going to do something a little bit different tonight. I'm going, just to start out, I'm going to let her talk about it when she gets up. But let's bring up Deborah Brown.
My dear friend and neighbor, poet Paul Kelly, passed away unexpectedly on May 5th, just 11 days before his 75th birthday. There will be a celebration of life on July 15th from 5 to 8 at the Broom Factory. To honor Paul, I would like to read to you a few of his poems. Now, these poems come from a series that he wrote called Learning the Light, over 100 poems. Shadow notes, a heat in night, nearness, ever near, ever breath, as bending over you, a breeze that almost lifts you, puts you down again, where you sleep in the bed of all your names. Imprinted on my hands, that they remember, that they remember, that wounds beat so still under them. What cannot yet be named, that weighs the tongue, what hour that bears down on morning, where every evening begins. Arms that are weary, where hands turn to smoke, what isolate fire that does not embrace every substance. What stands through the night behind, as if there could be others darker than this one. What branches bright beneath them and teaches eyes again, again, slowly, how to dream. Just another name carried face, history in every pore, all over your skin, no longer higher or broader than you in all your depth. In between nothing and everything, as if you could fill in the blanks the form has no blanks for. Dotted lines repeat, this is for your own good, this is for your own good. You will learn the new language without a moth. That neighbor owns a door to close, that by the saws in their hands, wood is exiled from memory of the tree. That a sheet on the clothesline nets the summer chimeras, that the sentinel squirrel abandons the roof, that the songs of school kids, new shoes, leap asphalt waves, that a kiss comes apart at the corner. For one moment, you have all that, all in a flap of the blackbird's wing. The timble room, where we live, where the needle points of life and rivers dissolve. The street kisses the street lamp, feet the pavement, eyes, eyes. In the not yet sight, the taste of leaf pressed, pebbles smooth in your mouths, lips us into the wind tomorrow. La, 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 la. Audible disappearances into the holes sealed by smiles, made vapor by the principles of hammers. Nothing from the row of words implanted in mouths, but plans to lower eyes, bow heads, fill every breath with dust of unknowledge made to last. By the longest line that roams the edge, the one passed slowly through the hand, raised only high enough to give itself away, warding off. In sleep, sleep's labor and levering. Eyes that pocket the first frost of all that was on fire until he touched it. Flung easily in sideways and cleared for return to the underseen. No hands for this final trick, no wheels, wings buckled to sun and moon. Words will hutter through words in the assembly of mirrors. Light will tool each eye, forgetting will do for distance. Unselved, you approach the white shaft that clevers the final hour and the one just coming into view. Night yoked and every blade point of light is needed. When those left waiting are still waiting, when comets of silenced words swarm the streets, when we raise the night to read what is written upon it, by fingers that have been danced themselves through their hands. And the right of way shall be yielded to red-winged blackbirds, please, slow at carrion crossings. Wheels along the tar like sink in every direction. Metal churns with ease. Limits set before, behind. One horizon backing off, another pulled closer. The leg slopes duly to capital cities for the first final word. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. I always loved Paul's poetry, and he was a very dear friend. I loved our conversations as well. And thank you for that tribute. Up next, Dozy Ubozy. Let's bring him up.
Thank you for that. May he rest in peace, Paul. That's a coincidence because my poem actually has a seemingly uplifting take on death. It's called Half Mad Sadistic Magician, and I got this title because I was reading Jean-Paul Sartre's Nausea, which is an existential novel about, everyday life and how absurd it is. Okay. In the basement of the Institute, machines of loving grace oscillate. The fear of effort is simply the fear of knowing. In a tug of war with death, and hope is the rope. Thank you.
That was wonderful, Dozy. As we give Dozy another hand, let's bring up Chantal.
Thanks, Bruce. Thanks, everybody. So I'm going to read one piece from a collection from 2020 that my partner in virtue there, Meg Freer, and I brought out. And it's a poem that, for various reasons, has been very much in my mind, even if it's from 2019, 2020, because it's always kind of true. And we brought these out in honor of the Sisters of Providence of Kingston. The current climate. The spirituality center brings weary bodies to the benches beneath the canopy amidst circles of leaves and petals, the gazebo's shade, a place that centers the gaze on all creation. Much ripples out, unpopular vox populi, voices raised against the oil that greases the wheels. Simplicity, simplicity was St. Vincent's first virtue. Stay in your lane, sisters, former patrons imply, at unseemly opposition to how things are. It was so easy when pardons could be bought with prayers, and prayers atoned for nearly everything before buying a strawberry had ethical implications. It was so easy, one imagines, when the kingdom was a place to reach later and had less to do with earth. Thank you.
It's wonderful, Chantel. Thank you. As we give her another hand, let's bring up Earl Collier.
Thanks, Bruce. This poem is a bit longer than what I'm used to writing, so I'll keep the preliminaries a bit short, but there is a few words of context that I think need to come before I read the poem. I grew up in a mining community that was a boom town at the turn of the 19th century, and in order to accommodate all of the new workers coming from the UK to work in the mines and the steel plant, they built what were called company houses. And these company houses were like one building that had two houses that were split half and half. So it'd be like a house on one on the right side and a house on the left side that were mirror images of each other. And as time went on and the boom died and it became a post-industrial town, these houses became associated with poverty because they were often owned by slumlords. This poem is called The Partition. On one side of a divided company house near the old steel plant ruins, curtain shades swoop and sway in an exotic twist that offers a revealing view of scattered dusty rays on a cracked window pane. Where rosebush blooms in fresh-cut grass under humid noon. Its weaving stems climb a facade of chipped brown paint peeling from wooden shingles. The bush softly trembles to freight train pulse as a diesel engine roars across the railway pass by the backyard's edge. Beyond the chestnut tree grove and thorny hedge that borders a dry swamp, a pungent spice of coal dust and grass fire surfs the seesaw breeze. It seeps into a disheveled house on the side that smells of cedar and disinfectant, where an old lady is seated at a card table, assembling a jigsaw puzzle over a hot cup of tea. And on the floor nearby, a young boy with holes in his socks sits transfixed against a wall. A painting of the Last Supper hangs above. He's reading a book on dream prophecy and tinkering with the pieces of an incomplete chess set. And on the other side of a divided company house, a window is boarded up by plywood. It smells of musk and gasoline and looms over an unkempt front yard, littered with junk and overgrown weeds. A mailbox marked 72 is stuffed with faded flyers. It hangs by a single rusty bolt. And beyond a chipped door, there's a dimly lit room. On the opposite side of the very same wall, where a boy reads and dreams, a battered woman quivers and weeps. She slouches toward the cold floor. A man muttering swear words paces in a dank hallway. He hurls a rum bottle into a dusty mirror with a jolted crash and a snapping cascade of glass. The woman mouths a muffled squeal as the man starts toward her. A voice erupts with wrath that spits a vile, slurred tirade. And on the other side of the house, a young boy's quiet repose is shattered by a blunt smash, and a daydream web is cut by a jettisoned bottle. The white queen topples from the chessboard, and an old lady spills her tea on a puzzle she can't complete. And through a thin yellowed wall comes a garbled assault of muffled, drunken swears. The boy's expression turns pallid. He winces with fear, but resists the urge to plug his ears as he shuffles away from the noise. He hears a heavy, blunt thud against the partition that was a haven only seconds ago. There are more inaudible words strewn, followed by sobs. He feels a warm, maternal embrace and reassuring whispers cloak the once enraged but now muted shouts that still echo. Soon the boy and his grandmother are on their feet. He trembles slightly as she phones the police. His eyes fall upon the Last Supper, its frame now turned askew by the thump. On one side of a divided company house near the old steel plant ruins, a boy stands before a rose bush on a freshly cut lawn. A cracked window reflects red and blue lights. A grandmother is in the driveway talking to an officer. And on the other side of the same house, a shaken woman stands in a doorway like a weeping angel in the fall. She reminds the boy of his mother. A bruised and shirtless man with uncouth hair is taken away in handcuffs. The boy meets his glance, and he is reminded of the Last Supper, suspended on a thin wall, and he can't decide if the man resembles Judas or Christ. And in the distance, a freight train whistles the heavy weight of force closing in on a place divided that always trembles at the partition between home.
Thank you, Earl. As we give Earl another hand, let's bring up Michael Flaho.
I don't often write love poems, but I thought I'd give it a try. It's called The Green Meadows of Your Eyes. We came together like an idea in a quiet studio. Or, as the sun and wind may push aside a cloud over a field of poppies, the fresh light blinded me for seconds. Our tabletop reflected the pale canvas of our initial brush, and I'm sure the gestures of my hands drew a rough, clumsy sketch of my thoughts, which must have been plain to the worldly eyes like yours. Your words and mine fetched from our palettes the colors and shades and textures needed as we explored the meaning and essential truths of our escape from landscapes of the past. The frame of our surroundings suited the atmosphere perfectly. We contemplated art in all its forms. We moved forward at our ease, and the breeze of nature gently blew those red petals together. And now our canvas is complete. I gaze with open view as figures run together through the moving light of trees in open country air, and I am serious as I run to the green meadows of your eyes.
This is wonderful. Thank you, Michael. And as we give Michael another hand, let's bring up Layli Jamali.
Good evening, everybody. Gloomy as always, I'm sorry. This is called Back to Back. You wake up in all the beds you've ever slept in, across cities and centuries, heavy and unwilling, all senses muffled. Mummified in forgotten chambers you lie, drowned in the long-departed memories of bright streaks of light swirling seductively around the mighty columns of Persepolis, dripping off gold dust upon the pink hues of lustful roadbeds, breaking in rainbows over the glowing azure domes of octagonal ponds, fountaining pearl dews to the very rims of the sky to wash off the lazy musk from the moon's drowsy face. You push the ice hard off the cliffs of slumber, out of the stuffy caves of hibernation, but still you cannot recognize the day. The dream you had lingers on at the back of the skull, the hands, the green shoes, the necklace that almost choked you down come back and dissolve in puzzling frames. You can feel your tongue bitter and stiff from the pills and remember the deep pain that knocked you out the night before, trying to set itself free from the corner it was chained to by the drug fumes that are now losing the grip. Can this body pull off and out of this density, sticking the empty moments to the blurriness ahead, exploding with every thought on the face like a gum balloon, smothering the breasts, sticking the eyelids to the revolting pupils that resist going back to school, to the A's and B's and C's and ones and twos and threes of this impassable life, but have no other choice because there is no other way to read and write a morning which has not yet even been born. Thank you.
Thank you, Layli. As we give Layli another hand, let's bring up Joseph Elliott.
Hey, before I get started, just want to plug this Saturday, there's another Common Language at Grains and Goods. I think it's at 7 o'clock. And I know some people from here will be reading there. I've been to all of them so far. It's always great. So I hope people will come out. Also, I have always read haiku here for the past almost a year. So I don't really remember how to write anything else. But this past Saturday was my older brother's 40th birthday. And I don't see him very often, and he's had a very challenging life. So I had a lot to say that I couldn't put in a haiku. So I think I wrote like a haibun, which is like typically prose, but it can be verse or a journal or something that incorporates a haiku, often placed at the end. So I didn't really mean to write one, but I did. I'm not sure that it's finished or that I'll be able to finish it, but I feel like if I don't read it now, I won't. And I'd like to read it. So this is from my older brother. You were supposed to die 40 years ago, and every year since. You gave yourself to the doctors so they could study you and be wrong about you, and hopefully be less wrong for others. You told me that even as a child, your only worry was for our parents. You didn't understand how they could handle all of that bad news and an expiration date that kept being kicked just a little further away. How did you know how to carry that in the first grade? How did you know how to carry my fear while never showing me that you had any? How did you know how to carry your friends as they drank their way through high school yelling at their feelings? How did you know how to carry our parents when Dad got cancer and they forgot how to talk to each other? You were always looking for things to carry. Then sometime in your early 20s after a surgery for I can't remember what, you were told you would never again be able to lift more than 50 pounds. A few years later, you deadlifted 500. I was there, I saw it. Your head looked like it was about to explode. Your big head that stopped being able to drain its own blood, so you grew thousands of tiny new veins that no one had ever grown before. And when the surgeon had to cut through all those veins to try and fix your heart again, he told us he simply didn't know if he could put them back together. You were open on the table that time for 25 hours, while Mom and I cracked jokes in the waiting room and Dad kept quiet. Did you tell them about the sticky notes you left on things around your apartment by way of a will? Did you tell them how you thought that was funny? Eventually you woke up, and you've woken up every day since with greater difficulty and greater pain for all of these years that the doctors kept being wrong about, and this past year that you, I think, were wrong about too. I know I had my doubts. Spitting rain, a slurred promise to do this more often. Spitting rain, a slurred promise to do this more often. Thank you.
That was wonderful. Thank you, Joseph. And as we give Joseph another hand, let's bring up Sonali Samoya.
It's been a couple of months since I could make it. And last time I was here, I read a poem that I described as an angry woman poem, which I tend to do often. And someone outside, after we had finished, had said, "Don't stop writing angry woman poems." And so yesterday I wrote another one. It has no title. They never do. But I wrote it after I got my eyebrows done. I pluck and pry at my skin at least once a week, and I have for just over a decade. Angrily, I do this ritual of maintenance, cursing the follicles of hair I was born with, misblaming my body for these silly acts of alleged femininity. As if I was 12, with hairy armpits and gymnastics classes, staring in the mirror and thinking, "Hey, I think these 2 square inches would look better bald." As if it was little old me deciding my unibrow was unfit to my face, and not that group of white kids throwing around racially charged comments about the hairy brown girl. And it most definitely isn't because I've grown up and realized that it's my duty and mine alone to avoid every stereotype with a Costco pack of razors and strictly sweet scented lotions, hair products, perfumes, and body sprays. And only just to ever receive, "You're too pretty to be Indian, you know." That comment stings more than any bikini wax I've endured, and it's in that rage, that fiery rage, that the aptitude of a womanhood exists most to me. Though my baby soft skin post-salon leaves me feeling sexy, I feel most like a woman when the rip of a wax strip makes me wince. I feel my grandmother's patience when Jerry from a little town just north of here asks if I'm allowed to date white guys. And I feel the rage of my aunts and their aunts every time someone says, "Can I just call you S instead?" Pain is the bonding trait of womanhood. Pick-me's and girls alike. Whether it's on the outside in the form of plucking and prying, or on the inside as you're rejected for being anything outside of an expectation, our beauty is pain, sit like a lady, it's a good thing you're pretty, womanhood has hardly ever been about us. Womanhood is pain management in a pink bow. Thank you.
Thank you, Sonali. And as we give Sonali another hand, let's bring up Bruce Cudmore.
So this one is about a red-winged blackbird. And if you've never been diver-bombed by one, you will. The magistrate. The red-winged blackbird will perch in trees, preferably on dead boughs that offer unobstructed views to its black eyes and its red eyes. But the bulrush or the tall marsh grass is its magisterial seat. It grips the scepter of flaxen reed, gives a piercing trill, and holds court.
Thank you, Bruce. And as we give Bruce another hand, let's bring up John Mahan.
So we started off within 3 minutes of spilling coffee on some very light shorts. Was our first start to this here. The second start was me deciding to write or read this poem first as opposed to second, because I really just wanted to share it. This is a poem that's a bit unusual for me because I try to be very focused whenever I'm writing pretty much anything. If I don't have a title, I don't really have a theme and I don't know where to go with my writing. But this one came to me at 12:30 last night. I ran downstairs and I wrote down 3 lines and then put together something this morning for the rest of this. We always seem to meet between destinations, suitcases in hand. I wonder if this time it may be terminal. I don't sail often, so we're never passing ships in the night. Unsure how poetic Flixer Megabus is, passing coaches on the highway sounds shite. We always seem to meet, awaiting takeoff, passports in hand. Our conversations are out of runway. Looking down on Dublin, sleeping over Pearson, pondering that this isn't goodbye, just a series of see you laters, depending on how our paths lie. We always seem to meet, sprinting for trains, hearts in hand. Fleeting window views and snippets of story. Brief glimpse of your constellation. And until the stars next align, see you in Toronto Reunion Station.
Thank you, John. And as we give John another hand, let's bring up, and again, it's my eyes, is it Matt? What's the last name?
Brack.
Sorry?
Brack.
Brat?
Brack.
Brack.
B-R-A-K.
B-R-A-K. Yep. Matt Brack, let's bring him up.
Kettle caught before the whistle, a toddler snores. Kettle caught before the whistle, a toddler snores.
Thank you, Matt. And as we give Matt another hand, let's bring up Taylor Davies.
So I wrote this piece for my best friend. And it's about something we can't really talk about. She doesn't live in Kingston either, so I don't think she's going to hear this. And I don't know if I'll ever be able to share it with her. But I wanted to share it. So, also, it's a haiku, because I've been recruited by my friend Joe into the haiku gang. Seems like there's more of us every month. So I think you have to read them twice. The impossible greenness of May, 10th Mother's Day spent without. The impossible greenness of May, 10th Mother's Day spent without. Thank you.
Thank you, Taylor. And as we give Taylor another hand, let's bring up Irfan.
Alrighty. Thank you. I'm not going to do that. Okay. So I don't know what this one is about, so I'm just going to read it. Okay. We but shadowy instances of passing moments betrayed by our endless patterns of uncertainties. Sit and await an ending, just to realize that we had been a patient of solitude all way long. Silent and uninspired, without a simple complaint, often too late to realize the sun, to stretch a hand, to breathe the scent of our own bodies. And you, the passionate sketch of my decaying shapeless shapes of my thoughts, who wanted to find eternity in a single glance, beyond the brick walls under the rain on the ever-shining riverbed, who sat witness to the darkening of his tongue as you had taken the time from him. And I, the traveler of the sorrowful nights of your absences, who struggles to remain, and the turbulent waters of possibilities, who dies and is reborn with the sound of the songbirds under the summer heat, reshaping, changing. Thank you.
Thank you, Irfan. And as we give him another hand, let's bring up Meg Freer.
I've got my monthly plug for Quirks of Human Nature. If you haven't been, it is always a good time, usually the third Tuesday of the month at Time Out Bar and Bistro. It's poetry performed with live improvised music. We have a woman from Toronto coming, who's a really dynamic poet, very intelligent and captivating. And we've got an accordion voice duo, along with my friend Deb Sherman's on piano. And bonus poets, we've got Bruce as one of them. Emily Wright is another one. And Elizabeth Green, who's a retired English professor at Queen's, will be a third bonus poet. So it's 7:30 to 9:30 on Tuesday, June 16th at Time Out Bar and Bistro, which is corner of Ontario and Johnson. There we go. And this will be going up on the wall there. You've probably heard Joseph read haiku inspired by a path, an urban trail out Highway 15 called Butternut Creek Trail, which connects to the longer Greenwood Park Trail. But this takes place at the Butternut Creek Trail. But it's a fall poem, but it's got some spring in it anyway. Full moon at the soccer field. In daylight, songbirds flit in and out of bushes along our usual trail near the field, and crows in threes sit in a particular dead tree beside the marsh. A side path descends to a hidden spot with terraced rocks and shade trees where we sit and listen to the creek that flows out of the marsh. The air turns cool and damp as we enter the woods, where trilliums and trout lilies quaver in spring and rabbits and red squirrels forage in fall. At the end of the woods, before the road, the creek abruptly appears again. I washed my dog there once after she rolled in some dead thing nearby. The water rills over rocks turned stepping stones that allow us to cross and climb through pines to a granite ridge overlooking a bigger part of the marsh. But this evening, a woman with one tiny dog and a big stick has persuaded me to avoid this marvelous trail, despite the bright hunter's moon, having just related how her other pup was snatched by a pair of coyotes right here a few nights ago at 1 a.m. as she dropped her garbage into the nearby can, how she called 911 because she couldn't think of who else to call but the operator redirected her to a suicide hotline, and how she sent a drone out in vain to search in vain for the dog, then sent a hunter with a tracking German Shepherd who found remains that may or may not have been her pup. So she keeps coming back to this very same place in case he returns. But before her story becomes even more involved, I extend my sympathy for her pup and decline with thanks her offer of the second big stick she keeps in her car, while my mind fills with questions about the woman and her nighttime walks and about coyotes and their proximity to residential areas. Then I turn away to walk my dog under floodlights at the soccer field's edges, where a different array of scents will tire her out while we wait for the team practice to finish. And I hear the woman call after us, "Stay safe."
Thank you, Meg. That was great. And up next, let's we give her another hand. Let's bring up Gwen Whitford. Thank you.
Bonsoir tout le monde. Oh, you don't know what I'm saying? Oh, I'm speaking Creole, Dominican style. Many of you might recall that Dominica is my beloved adopted country. And you know what? I caught haiku fever, too. So from the last time and this time, I've decided to present you with some haiku about Dominica. And mine will be the traditional style, that is the three lines, five, seven, five syllables, and nature-themed, of course, being the nature island. But first, a few words of explanation that you will hear in the haiku. Waitakubili is the indigenous name for Dominica, and it means tall as her body. YNT is an acronym for Waitakubili National Trail, which goes from one part of the country to the other part, so you know what I'm talking about. And the phrase, "After God, it is the land," is the national motto for Dominica. So I'm going to read a series of five haiku and five more in the next session. Tall is her body, lush green beauty all around, Waitakubili. Deep in the forest, hot mineral waters flow, soothing and healing. Working up a sweat, traversing mountain ridges, YNT hikers. Sights seen on the sea, whales breach and dolphins playing, offshore isle delights. Roseau Market Fair, after God it is the land, nature island gold, Missy.
Thank you, Gwen. And as we give Gwen another hand, let's bring up Beth Marie Michalska.
Thank you, Bruce. So I've been looking at minimalism and surrealism a bit lately. So, hat origins. Hat's first excursion, a fluke. She'd been placed close to the edge on a high shelf near the millinery's shop entrance. Door suddenly swings wide, off she glides into space above the drawers, hooks, hangers, entering intimate immensity. Her first flight felt infinite, wind moving. She never imagined transporting elsewhere. Not like outside, birds. She couldn't flap or flutter, no wings. A surprise, air. No longer lodged, hat free from her perch, moving, whisking past a corner bureau topped with garden-themed bonnets, further in flow, careening with a black wool bowler in the gents' area, landing on her crown near a steaming iron. Thud.
Thank you, Beth Marie. As we give Beth Marie another hand, let's also bring up Ellen Watt.
That was quicker than I imagined. Just find the right one here, which is here somewhere. Okay, sorry, I have not brought the light. Okay, so I'm really inspired by nature. And I wrote this poem for someone I used to know who was also inspired a lot by nature, but we both looked at it from different perspectives. So this is what the poem's about. Summer evening descends in quiet fire, the west aglow with fading hand, day slipping softly into the velvet of night, creation resting on the edge of its own wonder. I knew a woman once who loved flowers. She saw their beauty clearly, the curve, the colour, the tender design. I just got to stop there for just now. I have a problem with my eye. I might have to change my glasses in a minute. Anyway, I knew a woman once who loved flowers. She saw their beauty clearly, the curve, the colour, the tender design, and felt it deeply enough to be moved to tears. But she said she didn't believe in God. And I wondered then how the heart can recognise what the mind refuses, how the soul can tremble at the brushstrokes of glory, yet turn away from the artist. Because every petal seemed to whisper, and every colour seemed to sing, not of accident, but of intention, and of a beauty that does not begin or end with us. Thanks.
Wonderful. Thank you, Ellen. And as we give Ellen another hand, let's bring up Emily Wright.
I'm going to read a poem that I wrote a couple of years ago. So all of my family is from the UK, and I wrote this about the last time that I was there. And I was there with my mum and my nanny, my mum's mum, and on the beach where my nanny lives, the walkway, they call it the promenade or the prom. And so this is called Drinking Wine on the Prom. In a memory where the wind stands still, on the promenade in Bexhill, my nanny, mum, and I fill glasses with wine and drink by the beach. And everyone who passes us by makes comments like, oh, very civilized, and where's the bottle? Joy disguised as friendly community speech. And here's what these people don't know. My mum and nanny grew up here, though I grew up in Ontario, and we're briefly together, a whale in breach. Usually deep in the ocean between us, a moment together, these strangers have seen us, and they could never know what it means to us to drink wine together and silently preach the power of love that flows through a daughter. The wit and the meanness her mother has taught her, there must be something in the water of matrilineage for each of us to look much the same, though all born with a different last name. There's no doubt from where we came, in the light of the sun setting pink like a peach. Mum says, sit here long enough, Em, you'll get a boyfriend. I say, yeah, we'll all get boyfriends. Nanny says, oh, I can't be bothered with that now. And we all laugh as the seagulls screech. And then we let a silence descend, where three quiet women no need to pretend, and we could never start to comprehend all that our love has to teach. It makes us more of ourselves each day, and hear the words so painful to say. We'll always have to be this way, a mother, a daughter, an ocean, a reach. Thank you.
Thank you, Emily. That was wonderful. And again, thank you for the beautiful article you did on this open mic in the Kingstonist. As we give her another hand, let's go ahead and bring up Sarah Emtage.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was been getting back down to be by the water more often these days. And so when I was down by the water the other day, I started writing this. And then... yeah. It's called Living Water. Glory be to God for the liquidity of the lake and the liquid light that lacquers it and the springtime that unshackles it from ice into a movement with greater peace than any stillness could release. Glory for the valleys and hills changing places at will, the dunes above depths with graces that thrill. Sea, instead of seasickness, sea wellness envelops and develops us into the image of a living God. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. And as we give Sarah another hand, let's bring up Lindsay. Is it Key or... yeah. Lindsay Key.
Yeah.
Let's bring him up.
Hello, I'm Lindsay. We're new to town. We just moved in the summer, so this is great. It's nice to be here. So I have a poem I'm going to read to you guys. Apologize in advance. It does rhyme. And its title can be the first line, which is, I pause... with my box at the donation bin. I pause with my box at the donation bin to notice my daughters shed a fantastic skin of t-shirts and leggings and pajamas worn thin from too many hugs while she grew within them, her bird bones escaping into a steel sky to frayed hems of clouds in the breeze blowing by. I fashioned this feeling, this sorrow my own, these pale scraps of words imperfectly sewn. Imperfect, I know, to tailor the past, best let the box fall open and slip from my grasp.
It's wonderful, Lindsay. Thank you. As we give Lindsay another hand, let's bring up Eric Folsom.
Hi. Well, it had to happen eventually. So there's lots of internal clues. This is 1966, but times don't change that much, really. And it's a small town somewhere in Massachusetts. Up. The roller coaster cadences of Carl D'Souza's WBZ on the kitchen radio would carry up through the splintery pine plank floorboards in my bedroom above the family kitchen. Up every morning, first thing I made my bed, tucked the green corduroy spread beneath my pillow, parents' voices, the drip-a-later on the stove, smell of peanut butter on Dad's English muffins. Don Kent's weather forecast with his New England twang. Carl queued up a song, 5 o'clock world by the Vogues. That chirpy chorus, I'd lay up, up. We all love to yodel when the day's work is done. Orange juice, scrambled eggs, one eye on the clock. California dreamin', why does that flute sound out of key? Back up the stairs where I wetted my comb, fought to tame a cowlick with a mind of its own. The mirror showed my face like nobody I knew, just a empty blank spot, a space with no meaning. Narcissus in reverse, the dissonance of me. What the hell am I? A daydreamer, for starters. Hurry up and you'll be late for school! I delay. Up! Up!
Thank you, Eric. That was great. As we give Eric another hand, let's bring up Harlequin Crow.
So I've mentioned this a few times, but for those who don't know, in addition to being a poet, I'm also a burlesque performer. And that's not really something I can do here, but as it's Pride, happy Pride, thought I would do a PG version of one of my acts. So, Valkyries ride to a chorus containing far more camp than Wagner ever envisioned. Rainbows adorning more than just the bridge beneath each hoofbeat. Warrior queens and kings who gather the fabulous fallen to a place beyond patriarchal pettiness, unbreached by the bigotries of various phobics. The halls of Queerhalla, hallowed in the clicks of a million cute pairs of heels, to celebrate and elevate those no longer condemned to isolation, desperation, and rejection. Halls where the only use for closet is storing clothes, where no heart need harden in its own defense, and where everyone knows that love is love. So stare starwards for a glimpse of the Valkyrie's ride. Draw whatever hope it might provide, and know that when the time arrives, I'll see you, and you, and you, and all you cuties in the back, in Queerhalla!
Let's give Harlequin another hand. And Grace has been taking great care of us tonight. Whoa. Let's give her a hand as well. And I'm going to read a poem to take us out of this round into the next round. If you came in after we started and still and want to read, I'll put you up first in the second round, and then again, if there's time, and there should be, you can still get a second poem at the end of the second round. How's that? So anyway, just to make it fair. But while I get my poem, oh, one other thing. If I don't have your email address yet and you read tonight, I'll need it unless you don't want your poem to air. So one thing while I get my poem. We've heard some incredible readings tonight. Give yourselves and everybody else another one. It was kind of a theme that was set maybe a little bit earlier in the, but throughout even that first round. And I had a recent poem here that kind of falls into that. Anyway, it's called Faces. A face will change over the course of time. It will grow older, maybe a bit softer, longer